The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And if social distancing is making you a little stir crazy, the coronavirus has stressed you out. Well, Duff McKagan is here. Have no fear. He's got a temporary break for you with a huge laugh with the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan calling you. I'm in Los Angeles, California, driving to rehearsal, getting ready for my tour, South America and whatnot. I don't know if I told you the story before. My first day of PE class, I forgot my gym clothes. So I had to do the class in my underwear, and that's how I lost my job as a gym teacher. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Listen, Duff, thanks for making us laugh, never missing a call during this trying time. Trying to make us laugh during this trying time. Duff's at home with his family after Guns N' Roses were forced to postpone their tour of South and Central America, which was supposed to start later this month. Coronavirus has them rescheduling those dates to November. Guns are still planning to hit North America this summer. Dates still scheduled to start July 4th in Milwaukee. Hopefully life will be a little bit back to normal by that time. In the meantime, we have a big announcement about the Fozzy Save the World Tour that's happening April and May. It looks like we're going to be postponed. We're going to have a full details about that on Tuesday. And I said postponed, not canceled, because we've rescheduled most of the dates. In the meantime, we're going out in July. It seems like a year from now, but we're going to be going out to Columbus, Grand Rapids, Chicago, Indianapolis, doing the Rock Fest in Cadott, Wisconsin, doing shows in July and August, and Kiss Cruise October 30th. Well, let's just get through the trying times right now. Lots of great stuff going on in AEW. If you saw our first closed set show, the debut of the Exalted One, Luke Harper, and more importantly, the debut of Matt Hardy, made his secret surprise debut at AEW on Wednesday night. You hear how it all came down. And even though Matt is against me on a different team at Blood and Guts, he's with the Elite. Of course, I'm with the Inner Circle. Matt and I have no problems as of right now. And he's an old friend and with a huge, huge jump from WWE to AEW. So we'll hear the whole story right here, right now on Talk is Jericho. All right, so strange time in the world today, but the show must go on, as we always say. And in AEW, we had built up a really great storyline that culminated tonight, which is the 18th. Supposed to be in Rochester, which is the home of Brody Lee. He was going to make his debut as kind of a swerve of the Exalted One, and that would lead to the debut of Matt Hardy as the fifth member of the Elite. And it's interesting because, first of all, listen, you're on the Elite squad. That's great. You and I have known each other for 20 years. No animosity yet. Next week it might be different. The week after that might be different, but we've known each other for a long time. And kind of a strange night for this debut, which was supposed to be in front of 6,000 screaming fans and ended up being in front of 6 in the empty arena in Jacksonville.
Yes, it was definitely a strange night. The world is in a very strange, uncertain place right now. And I have to tell you, if the Inner Circle would have been a man down, I might have joined forces with you. Who knows?
I would have called you.
You know? So I was a free agent. I was
trying to get a cone track.
You know, I'm just trying to get that cone tracked, as the book says. I'm trying to get that cone tracked, you know?
But it's funny, though, because we've been talking for a bit, And like we said, this is a huge deal to have Matt and to have Hardy. I'm going to say Harper. I mean to say Brody Lee. The big double swerve. And we had like, this is going to be great. And it's going to go to Rochester, go to Newark. And then, as they say, life is what happens when you make other plans. And totally just within a week, complete turnaround. How was it for you when 2 weeks ago you're super excited, your contract runs up and you're ready to come in, seeing the world kind of change?
Yeah, man. I mean, I was extremely excited and pumped about debuting in Rochester, and especially being a double debut. You get Brody Lee and you get Matt Hardy. And I think like Evil Uno and those guys, the Dark Order guys, they did a great job playing into the current fan base, the smart fans, as far as like maybe Matt Hardy is the exalted one. And AEW, the people who book it, did really well with that concept also. But to me, I feel like with that diehard audience, as they continue to exponentially get larger and they're smarter and there's so much technology and information out there, our job is to keep them guessing what our next move is. And I thought we did a really good job at keeping them guessing. Like a lot of people thought that I was coming to AEW, but they didn't know what my role would be. So that's really what I worked hard to keep them guessing on. And it was still a home run tonight in an empty arena audience, you know, but like considering the reaction that we got back from the TV audience, I was just very happy with it. And I felt like I'd done my job.
Well, and that's the thing, like we can't control this. And we've talked about this earlier, and we can mention how weird it was when 9/11 happened. We were in Houston.
Yes.
You were there. We were there. All of us were there. And I think we were in San Antonio driving to Houston for SmackDown. Monday, we did the Monday show. And when we woke up in the morning in San Antonio, the world had ended. And we had to stay in Houston for a couple of days amongst all of this uncertainty to put on our show, which was completely opposite. It was the first major public gathering. But to me, the vibe was the same. We didn't know what was going to be happening. Kind of similar tonight, but without 10,000 people, you know, chanting USA. There's six of us because it's not USA now. It's the whole world.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it, just the level of uncertainty was just unbelievable. You know, especially looking back at 9/11. And tonight it was as well. But it's even for us as performers, it's just such a strange, odd environment to go into without a crowd. You know, especially like when you're on a top brand, a global television show, you know, that always has an audience that is super vocal and super active and super interactive, and there's just none.
Right.
It's just insane. And it's just, it takes a huge part away from the actual event.
It's funny because we based it around Vanguard One, your fine friend, similar to my fine friend, the obscenely expensive Jarrotron 5000.
Yeah, Vanguard One, man's best friend. More loyal than a dog.
Well, see, just here's a little bit of trivia for everybody listening. Had we been in Rochester, we weren't allowed to fly Vanguard inside the arena. There's, is it FCC? Like the actual airport rules. For some reason, couldn't drive a drone in there. So we would have had to done it from the outside, which would have been fine. But, you know, it's one of those things, like when it was happening, I couldn't see it or couldn't hear it. And they just kept telling me to stretch. So I'm just like talking stuff. Hey, Orange Cassidy, you're an idiot. And then finally Matt Jackson goes, hey, look at this. And I was like, oh, finally it's there. Had there been 6,000 people, somebody would have seen it prior and pointed, and there would have been that reaction. But with nobody there, it was very strange because there's nothing until it's like, oh, there it is.
Yeah, it's definitely different because once again, if you have Vanguard One, a drone flying in, it's an inanimate object. And once again, like if it did the landing in the ring, originally the drone was going to fly back to me and we're going to try and get a real cool beauty shot, but that didn't happen. So like I went ahead and went live because we were actually doing live TV. So it was kind of like an audible, you know?
And I had no idea it was supposed to fly back to you.
Right.
And that's one of the great things about AEW, as over rehearsed as WWE can be, you know, every single thing in AEW, sometimes the stuff slips through the cracks and you're forced to improv, which is kind of what the essence of what wrestling really is.
It is. That is actually truly the essence, like being able to change, you know, in a moment's notice and go a different direction and really base whatever you're doing off the reactions you're getting.
Now, obviously it was a strange night, different night, but your first, because you were sequestered for a while, but when you finally got to AEW, what were some of the, did you notice any differences tonight in comparison to WWE?
I mean, just such a laid back atmosphere. You know, obviously there it was kind of like minimal as far as personnel was there and talent, you know, so that was cool. It's like I knew the majority of people that were there working. I'd either worked with them in the past at WWE or at Impact Wrestling, whatever it may be. And just the one thing that I really noticed is like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And they're like, that sounds great. As opposed to like, well, we've got to ask so-and-so, and then we have to ask so-and-so, yeah. And then he has to ask Vince, you know, as far as going through all those different levels of authority. It was just like, sure, that sounds great, you know, and it made it super easy. I did some promos and vignettes at the end of the night, and I was just like, this is what I'm thinking about saying. Does it sound cool? And they said, sounds cool.
Yeah.
And I did it. So it was just very easy and just very – it was very refreshing just to, like, not have any kind of restraints on you and just go and be creative and do your thing and do you, because nobody does themselves better than them.
Well, and it's like we're saying, I mean, you've been doing this 25 years, give or take. I'm almost 30. Mox is probably close to 20, 15 at least. And all of us, Cody, have really thrived in this environment. Dustin Rhodes, I mean, they're ready to put him out to pasture. And I think once we start... You know, like I said, you're coming in at a very strange time. But I think you, much like Moxley, when you really get a hold here, a foothold, and are able to unleash your creativity, which we saw in Impact, which was the best thing on Impact for a while, I think you're going to just go be out of control here. You're going to have so many ideas. And that's what we want from our guys is, you said from the AEW, there is no AEW bookers. We are the bookers, but we're all doing it together.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where the magic happens.
Right.
When the talent knows their strengths and their weaknesses, and you really, you know, you gravitate towards your strengths. And I think basically, you know, the whole framework of AEW from what I've seen so far is there's like an outline. This is kind of where we want to go. This is kind of how what we'd like to do to get there. How do you suggest we get there? Mm-hmm. And then the talent fills in the blanks. And that's magic. That's the beauty of this business.
So you guys came back. I remember it was... We can go into it further. It was WrestleMania in
WrestleMania
Orlando?
33. Yep.
That's when I worked Kevin Owens.
So, yes.
So that was my last one. So that was 3 years ago already. So we'll talk about that side of things. But what led you to want to get out? And also, too, once again, leaving without your brother, who's a big part of your... I can't remember a time when you didn't work with your brother. I'm sure there has been, but it seems like he's always with you at some point.
Yeah. I mean, we're obviously very... known together synonymously.
Close.
Yeah. But I just think it got to the point where WWE has so many talents under contract. And the reason they have all these talents under contract is because they don't want anyone else having people that could like move the needle or like make a difference or like, you know, cut into their business at all. So it's just like they're trying to scoop up all the talent across the globe, right? You know, as far as monopolizing the business. You know, and once AEW started, and it was another place that had a great TV show on TNT, star power. I mean, you're the guy that, you know, really kicked it off and were the man that, like, really established AEW in many, many ways because you had the greatest name value. And once this was going on and it allowed other options, to me, I could have stayed at WWE. They tried very hard to sign me. They offered me very good money. But I know my role would have been minimized. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, for me... More important than money right now is just like to totally utilize my creativity. And these last 3-4 years, whatever I might have to do this, I want to enjoy it. I want to like be driven and fueled by the passion I have for this. And I want to be creative and I want to have fun. And at WWE, a lot of times they suck the fun out of things because it becomes such a business and you just become a cog in the machine. And to me, it wasn't about being a cog in the machine and like making X amount of dollars. To me, it was about enjoying what I was doing and really like, enjoying every single second I have left doing this. And AEW just turned out to be the best case scenario for me.
You know, because talking from my standpoint, like I worked there straight for almost 20 years. And I was like, I'll never work in the States. I'll never work for anybody but Vince. Mm-hmm. And then the idea for New Japan
We had conversations
we
during
did.
This time. Yeah.
Because, and we'll get into this. You and I are the two examples of complete reinvention that led to complete career extension.
Right.
You know, reinvention equals extension.
Yes.
But, and that comes from a creativity standpoint. So when I had left to do the Fozzy stuff, when Judas first started taking off, I had no intentions of ever going anywhere. And then I worked the match with Kenny in New Japan. And that's when I was like, oh my gosh, like I forgot what wrestling is. And this is not a cut down of WWE, but like you said, they do things that way. It's very successful, but it's Vince's world and his machine. Mm-hmm. And then I go away from that just for one match, dude. And I was like, I remember what wrestling's about. And then I did a few more matches in Japan. Then the AEW thing came up, and it's like, you know what? I don't want to do it anymore that way. I want to do it my way. What was it? Because for me, I never left. You left for a long period of time and became Broken Matt in TNA and then Impact. And before that, you were Big Money Matt and all this other stuff. Did you get originally let go from WWE the first time? Did you get fired? Did you leave on your own? I can't remember.
Well, the first time with WWE, I got let go. That was in 2005.
Right.
But it was only for a few months. I got myself hot and I was hired back. And then in 2010, I actually asked for my release, but I was also in a very bad place.
Right. Yeah,
just in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I needed to address myself. And I think a big part of my problem was just that, like, as I was getting older, and at that point I was, you know, gosh, 17, 18 years in.
Yeah.
You know,
nonstop.
Like I started in 92, like probably nonstop from 96, 97.
You started
in
92, wow.
Yeah, in 92. But obviously those first few years were just here and there. Mm-hmm. But then like after running hard for so long, and especially all the stuff we did as, you know, Team Extreme and the Hardy Boys, all the crazy bumps and TLC matches nonstop, it's just like my body, I couldn't perform like I used to in 2010. And then I remember saying, like, you know, I'm hurt. I need to take some time away. I need to do this. And I'm like, no, you're a very dependable guy. You can help young, new, green talent. We can put you out on the road with a big guy, and you can help teach him and get him through the match and make him feel comfortable. And I just kind of wasn't able to come off the road. And then whenever I asked someone about my injuries and being hurt, I ended up being prescribed pills from doctors at that point. And that was it. And that was my downfall at that point. And then it got to the point where, dealing with the stress of the WWE job, I was almost like, well, damn, I'll take a couple more and then I don't feel the stress as much. You know, so that's what it was. It was a huge lesson about learning truly about myself, going through all that. And then like once I, in many ways, rendered myself obsolete and kind of deleted myself off the scene for a little while, I just healed up physically, mentally, emotionally, across the board. And then when I stuck my toe back in, it ended up being Ring of Honor. I did some indie stuff here and there. And then I was like, okay, I can do this. I just have to change the way I work. Mm-hmm. I have to be smarter. I have to work in a way that is relative to my age and the way my bump card has been filled up at that point. You know, and that's actually why Broken Matt Hardy started in the beginning, just so I would be more entertainment driven, more, you know, much more of a character than anything else. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot of lessons through that. And now I've worked really hard the last 4 or 5 years to like get myself in shape and take care of my body. And I'm very, very healthy in the big scheme of things, you know, but I just have to work smart. I have to work, you know, in a way that is relative to my age.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right. But you know what's so funny? Because I remember when I was a kid, I used to go to AWA before WWE came in. Nick Bockwinkel and Baron Von Raschke and Crusher and all these guys. And dude, I don't know how old Bockwinkel was. He must have been 50. He might have been 40, but he was old and super over. Everybody hated him. If you watch his matches, he didn't do anything, but he just had such great presence and really knew that character aspect. And then you go like to Hogan in the 80s, like they never did anything, but they had the crowd in the palm of their hands. I don't think you really, you, us in general, understand what wrestling's really about until you get to that 40 age. Mm-hmm. And then you realize, like, it's all about character and connecting with the audience. How do I connect with the audience? You know, there's guys that you'll see the rosters you watch more. There's guys that can do these guys before the show starts. They'll be sitting in the ring doing double shooting star presses. And I'm not kidding, to pop each other. Watch this one. 850. Watch this one. 727. Like, what are you guys doing? There's nobody here. Well, we're just fooling around. And I'm like, I hate everyone. QT Marshall, Brandon Cutler, these guys are doing shooting star presses and like double moonsaults. No offense, they don't look like that type of guy. And right. I'm like, the world has changed. Of all these guys are so athletic, but it's the connection with the audience and the character development that we've understood that really takes you to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, and that is ultimately what bonds you with the fans, and that's what makes you money. And it's almost like a cruel joke in some ways with the business. When you're young and healthy and you can do everything and anything, you don't even think about that until you get hurt and injured enough that you're forced to think about that. Mm-hmm. And then like what you said that 40 years of age or whatever, you know, typically you get to an age and you're like, oh, I have to change up my style if this is going to work. But in some ways, this is better because now I'm doing what I need to do to connect with the audience.
And you're a lot like me, and I say that with great respect. I was never the highest of flyers. I was never a big body guy, but I could always do a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. So that when I got older, like I do a moonsault and a springboard dropkick. That's all I'd ever really done. And you were always like that within the Hardy Boys, because Jeff obviously, Jeff is Darby Allin, this weird right. X Factor guy that will do anything, can do anything. And you were, I always felt that, and not felt, I know for sure, but even watching it, you kind of quarterbacked that. Mm-hmm. You might have been more apt to put together the spots that made Jeff look like the hero and the star, but you were kind of the guy behind the scenes.
For so many years, when we first really got over as the Hardy Boys, Team Extreme, Jeff would just say like, all right, tell me what to do, man. Uh-huh. You know, just like, tell me what to do, what fits where, and I'll do it. And it really is. I realized too, like, there's no use in me trying to do all this stuff because I can't do it as good as him. You know, he's like a very, very freak athlete, and he's an anomaly in many ways, especially with the way he didn't get hurt, especially earlier on in his career with all the insane stuff he was doing. So I realized, like, okay, I have to play to my strengths. And for me, it was a great opportunity I was given whenever we did break up, and I went to SmackDown, and we were on separate brands, and I got to do the Matt Hardy version one thing. And that was the Sensei Mattitude. And it played into a character that was much more
Sensei Mattitude.
Easy for me because it was like this larger than life delusional character who believed he was like the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I could do that, and I could do that well. And I even feel like now coming to AEW, especially if I was in Vince's world, because you know how Vince is too. Like once his mind is made up on something, that's how he sees it
it's
forever.
It's hard to get out of it.
Yeah. It really is. You know, when you have Edge and Christian, Edge was always the guy of the two. When you have Matt and Jeff, Jeff was always the guy because, you know, universally, he's always been more popular. It is what it is. But, you know, it's hard to break that mold. So I felt like even coming here to AEW and even having time where Jeff still is under contract at WWE, this is really good for me because it gives me an opportunity to be me and really highlight and focus on my strengths. And especially doing Broken Matt, I really know what I'm doing this time around.
And the one time that wasn't the case where Jeff was kind of the star, you guys are both stars, huge stars, but where Jeff was kind of the more focused on, when you did the Broken Matt with the Lake of Reincarnation, I felt Jeff was almost following along because it was so character driven. And we know Jeff, he's the best guy ever, but he's super laid back. He's Jeff Hardy.
Right.
And you had this ramped up, ridiculous, insane character. That was one time when I felt like he was just like, all right, man, I'll follow along, but I don't know what I'm doing. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and I really do. Kudos to him, and I greatly appreciate how well he went along with the whole Brother Nero stick. It's like I had an idea, like, I think we can do this, and I think ultimately, even though I'm a bad guy here, I think I'll become a good guy if you roll with it in this certain way. And at first, he would look at me like confused and like, I don't know. And I was like, really? Like, I want to do this. So you don't do a whisper and a win and a swanton during every match, and you don't dive out of the ring two times every match. Right. I want to like preserve your body too. That's why I'm forcing you to be Brother Nero, and you can't be a spot monkey anymore. And he was like, what? And then once we started doing it, he was like, I remember one time he told me, he said, man, this is really cool. I like this. I just like sing a little bit and don't have to do the swanton and everything else or jump off the ropes. This is cool. And he really got behind it, and he really enjoyed it, and he had a blast doing it.
So how did you, and we talked about this, we actually did one of my favorite podcasts ever where we spoke completely to Broken Matt for an hour, which was great. But like I said, that character was summer of 16, 17?
Yeah, 17? Yeah. It started summer of 16, went through
that's one
March
of, those
of
ones,
2017.
That's one of those ones that when you would put a new one out, monitor, sell it. We were in Japan at the Sumo Arena, and the new one had just come out, and we had a rule. If you want to watch it, you got to come sit down and we'll show it continuously, but you can't come in halfway through. And I remember Cena was one of them. He's like, I got to do it. Well, you got to wait for the next showing. And he came back in, you know, John. He's like, okay, I'll wait. And like, and we're just gathering around. It was so much fun. It's so entertaining. How did you create that character? Where did it come from?
A lot of that came from television shows I watched. And I'll be honest, this is probably the most straightforward, honest answer I can give. True Blood was one of the shows I first watched. Whenever I like had burnout at the end of my WWE run, and then once I started doing some Ring of Honor, and eventually I ended up going back to Impact, and I wasn't working full time, I discovered television. I was a big fan of Dexter. True Detective later on became a big love of mine, but True Blood also is a show I enjoyed. And following these vampires who lived in all these different eras and different time periods, and they were like relative to the era, and I was like, I wish I could like have a character like that. That's really what I want to do. So I started thinking about it and trying to apply like the life of a vampire who's lived 2,000 years to a wrestling character. And then what I came up with was like, what if something happened to me where it was like this big traumatic incident and ended up being Jeff diving off the top of the impact zone that broke me, but it like opened up parts of my mind and I use more of my mind than a regular human does. And like I become conscious of like where my soul has been in different bodies in different vessels. So it's like you have a soul that like lives in a vessel, a body for so long, and then that vessel dies and then it moves on to the next one. And that was my whole motivation behind creating Broken Matt. It was like more or less from True Blood and seeing like vampires who'd lived for thousands of years in different time periods
that had different experiences. Yeah, they had a girlfriend in the 1300s and a girlfriend in the 1500s, or
you know, they lived at one point through the Black Plague. Mm-hmm. You know, then maybe they lived through World War II. You know, or just different time periods like that, which totally allows you to change up so many things. And even before I left TNA, I started doing some of that, where I reverted back to the King in Gold, which was my original vessel, which was from Alexandria, Egypt, you know, which
like King Tut or something.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I had a whole bunch of ideas of different things to do. And now that I'm here at AEW, I actually have started again. Now my vessel Zenith was killed off by Kinnegan. I never revealed this yet, but like Kinnegan ultimately becomes like a kind of a reference, like for an essence that is like, you know, Vince and the WWE in some ways. And
Kinnegan,
you know, because like the very end, Kinnegan, like, you know, is Kennedy. And then at the very end, the Gin is like Negan spelled backwards, where it's like a sanctuary. And if you know Negan from The Walking Dead, like you come in, you can have a good life there, but like you have to like bow down to him and do whatever he says. And that is kind of the deal. And that's where I created that term. And then Abomination was the other thing. And that was like an extension from Bray. And I love that I took like Abigail and Bray being deleted in the Lake of Reincarnation. And then I got part of Abigail and Abomination in the water whenever I was being trying to find my broken brilliance in the whole Free the Elite thing. I tried to tie in like different universes. And I love doing the stuff with Randy Orton at the very end, because I was able to tie that in to a different universe, which allowed me to come into AEW as a new character. Now my new essence is Damascus as opposed to Zenith. Zenith died. He was killed by Abomination and Kinnegan. And now I am in Damascus. Damascus is in my vessel. And Damascus is an older, more powerful essence. The hair is red, obviously. And Damascus is from 999 BC. A lot more vicious, a lot more serious.
Dude, first of all, if I was stoned right now, I'd just be like, dude. This reminds me of when I was about 12 years old playing Dungeons & Dragons. We would play for weekends at a time. And I would come home and I would tell my mom all of this stuff like you're telling me, and she'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about, but the imagination that you're showing for this is off the charts. And this is what I love about your kind of breakthrough. Like, listen, you were a huge star, but the Broken Matt was different level shit for me. And that description you just gave, like, that's a novel. It's like Frank Herbert and Dune or something like that. How long were you sitting down thinking about this? Did you put it on paper? How are you coming up with all this?
I mean, a lot of that really just like I drew stuff from television shows I watched.
But are you writing it down and coming like this beget this?
No, sometimes I would. I would try and make it a habit. If I came up with something that was a really great idea, I'd try and put it in my phone so I wouldn't forget about it. Even like when I said, like, you know, my primal passenger, that was a big thing with Broken Matt back in the day. And that was even from like Dexter and the Dark Passenger. Yeah, I was so inspired by that. You know?
Fozzy has a song called Dark Passenger, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wrote that about him.
So many cool things. And like Rustin Cole from True Detective, an amazing character. There's a lot of things I tried to pull
from
him.
Was that McConaughey?
Yeah, Matthew great. McConaughey.
That was the best season of True Detective.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It's never even come close.
No, I mean, it was off the charts great. Yeah. So there was definitely things I pull, and like, there's just so much great content and so much media out there to watch nowadays. I, I'll watch something, and if I'm very intrigued and interested by a show, I'll usually be able to find something that I go, I could apply this to my character in some way and make it work. And the cool thing about Broken Matt and the Broken Universe is like kind of anything is possible, especially like the Hardy Compound is like a property where like everything is magic. So there's really, it's like limitless. There's no boundaries.
Jeff live there too? Anything. This is just your...
Yeah. No, yeah.
You guys both live on the same plot of land, so to speak?
We have 80 some acres.
In the woods.
Yeah, in the woods. the best place to be right now during the...
Well, yeah, no kidding. Scare. I might come over. You might not let me in, but I'll hang out at the gate. But I want to talk a little bit, because like I said, when we talked to Broken Matt, we talked about his whole essence, but actually talking to Matt Hardy, when you filmed all these amazing... Just short films is the best way I can describe. It wasn't even a vignette. And there was so much invention and imagination. And I mean, obviously Rebby's your wife and King Maxwell, but Senior Benjamin, like where are you getting the ideas to, like, it's like a Ralphus thing. Like you see him around and you go, this guy would be great. Or I just needed a silent man. Like Senior Benjamin was huge.
Yeah. It's incredible how
people love that shit. That's why.
No, they do. Yeah, I mean, Senior Benjamin was so great. And the funny thing is, like, if you ever meet him, he is the nicest, sweetest guy alive in existence. And like, with him, I was just like, we have to keep him very limited. Mm-hmm. You know, people would say, like, oh, brother, he's a Barriqua, right? I said, well, was he in the business? He worked for Carlito's dad? He didn't know anything about the business. He was a superintendent in New York City, is what he
did. Did you ever hear when Hoovy was on Kona's podcast and he was like, he thought that Senior Benjamin was a Mexican? He's like, hey, baby, we're from the same place, baby, we're in Mexico. He's like, oh, I'm from Puerto Rico. Oh, sorry, baby. So he was a superintendent in New York City?
Yeah,
like
a building.
Teacher?
No, he was a super. He was the super of the building, you know, took care of
manager, janitor.
Yeah, and did all the work in this big-ass apartment building in Queens. And it was like he had no idea about wrestling. So like literally everything we did, we coached him through. So I would do everything I could to just try and protect him and make him seem like this guy who's like a gardener, which he really is. And he has a great passion for gardening gardening and for having a garden. And he's this gardener who like has this like mean streak, who like likes to do cruel and unusual things to people or prepare the battlefield for massacre or whatever it may be. And it's crazy. Like we protected him very hard, and it worked, and he got over huge.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So when you got Senior Benjamin, and I know that when I had Ralphus come on board, a little bit confused as to what was going on, but that's kind of part of the charm of the character.
Right.
So how would you explain things to Senior Benjamin? Obviously he speaks English.
Yes. Yeah. Right. He speaks English, speaks Spanish. And a lot of times my wife, you know, Queen Rebecca would be translating to him, you know, making sure he understands it.
Perfect English.
Then. No. He speaks English good. But Spanish is by far his first language. So like if you want him to understand a situation, 100% is better if it's in Spanish.
Gotcha. So did he start getting popular where people would see him on the street? And
he would, yeah. He was like blown away. Like I was giving him money from Pro Wrestling Tees, the t-shirts. And he said, what, is this for me? Like, you know, one time we did a big meet and greet at this big convention. And I, at the end, I gave him his money for his autographs. He's like, this is too much, Mr. Hardy. You know, this is too much, Matt. He's the most adorable, sweet guy, and he's just there for anything. And like without him, it would be very hard raising three kids right now. He helps out a whole lot, especially my dad is in real poor health.
Right. You know, Gilbert. So shout out to Gilbert.
Yeah. Shout out to Gilbert, the legend. Yeah. But like, you know, Senior Benjamin helps out so much with the kids. Mm-hmm. He's such a good grandpa too.
Let me ask you this from a standpoint of we talk about King Maxwell, obviously. Right off the bat, he was probably, I don't know, a year or 2 years when you started having him involved?
Zero. When he started. Yeah, he wasn't even a year old.
So he's growing up kind of in the spotlight. I can see whenever you do stuff with him, he's just like, whatevs.
Yeah.
Don't care, right?
He's just very accustomed to it. Like, I was talking about having different characters, and he says, Dada, I have a different character. this is King Maxwell, crazy version. And he throws his hair in his face and he walks at me like he's the ring. And he's like 4 years old. I mean, he like gets it, you know? And I'll even talk about when we're wrestling. Oh, the guy did that. And this is so funny too. He said, yeah, I saw that thing that Randy Orton did to you. And, you know, and I go, well, you know, it's okay. Like, you know, we're okay besides that. And whenever the Bucks came to my house, we were doing a Free the Elite episode. There's this great outtake. I don't know if you happen to see it or not, but like, we had him run up. I thought this would be funny. The Bucks pull up like they're big stars, right? And then Maxwell runs out and goes, hey guys, is Orange Cassidy with you? And that was my idea. And the Bucks loved it. And he did that. And we did it a couple times. And then my wife, who was shooting it, says, well, I want to do one more of those. And we were talking about the angle where Randy did the whole thing, like with the concerto giving a concussion. We're talking about Randy Orton and Maxwell knew who that was from seeing the show. And then we go, okay, let's do one more take of this. And then Maxwell runs in and goes, hey guys, is Randy Orton with you guys? And it's funny, he grabs his face and he goes, oh God, like he knew he said the wrong thing. And the outtake was so unbelievably good. And we all died laughing.
Is that something you would do more of? Was it the Broken Family? I believe you called it.
Yeah, just House Hardy.
Yeah, would you do more of that?
Absolutely, and I think we will here. You know, kind of with the way things go. I think that's part of the whole charm of Broken Matt Hardy because it's just like so different and so unique and so outlandish. And I love having characters to play off of and to be around different unique characters.
I think it would get a big pop. Like we talk about Cody as the Nightmare Family, and you know the Bucks have such a deep family, you know, bond as well. It just kind of fits the whole, you know, vibe here,
right?
Of AEW. Did you try and pitch? Well, we'll talk about more in depth. But when you went to WWE with this, did you try and have them involved?
Yeah, I mean, we did it with the Ultimate Deletion, and it's funny. Like I dealt with Ed Koski, and I just kind of I wrote the whole thing up, and I gave it to Ed, and I think he like just tried to like clean it up a little bit, and kind of gave it to Vince, and it's like it took forever to get a final deletion type fight with Bray. We'd both wanted to. And I just said, man, we need these vignettes at home because like Broken Matt is not like a character that gets in the ring and wrestles every week. Like I need to do these vignettes and like my wrestling appearance, I'm just much more of a gimmick, right? Mm-hmm. And then once Bray and I got together, like we pitched this idea that I think would have been amazing. And like literally we said like, if we're gonna be these two gimmicks that are like maybe supernatural characters or whatever it may be, like Bray had his compound burned down by Randy. You know, like he'd lost his Wyatt family. I had deleted him in the lake. He didn't have anything, but now he was my tag team partner because I'd cleansed him of Abigail. Have him show up with like, you know, a stick with a bandana tied on like a hobo. Like, this guy shows up and he's like, hey, well, I don't have anywhere else to go. Can I just crash here at the Hardy compound? You know, and then once he gets to the Hardy compound, we'll do things like, okay, you have to be part of the family. Senior Benjamin's like, okay, it's your turn to ride the mower of lawns. You have to mow the grass. You know, or maybe like King Maxwell comes out, you know, and he's like bossing him around. But then like we obviously build this bond and then we make him like this lovable character. And then like we don't wrestle every week whenever we're the tag champs. You know, we have these fun vignettes and like they can be funny, but then they can be serious if we need to, whatever. And you build a bond and relationship between us. But like at that point, we're doing 3 hours of Raw and they just like they had us on TV doing like a 3 or 4 minute match every week. And it didn't help our opponents because they were getting Oscar'd. And with us, it really didn't help us, like having a strong win like that. It was much more about the characters of Broken Matt or Woken Matt at that time and Bray Wyatt. But like we just could not get those vignettes approved. And I feel like it's one of those things, like if Vince can't be there and like be in control of it, then he doesn't trust anyone
to do it. Well, it's also a lot of it too, and we all know this, that if it's not Vince's idea, Vince's character, it's really hard to convince him of it. And he's going to have to put his spin on it. The majority of the reason why I worked is it comes completely from your mind.
Right.
And you are getting guys, like I think you said Jeremy Borash was involved, or you know, guys that you trust that you can help execute this vision that might throw some ideas in, but they're not going to completely, for lack of a better term, bastardize it.
Right, right.
You know?
Man, Jeremy Borash and Jimmy Paradise, those guys were both amazing.
Jimmy Paradise.
He worked at TNA for the longest time, and now he's hired at NXT, and he was like JB's right-hand man in so many ways.
Gotcha.
He's great with the camera. He was great, like, getting the psychology of the whole Broken Universe and the Broken Matt concept, and he was very good and creative at, like, coming up with ways to film stuff to make it look magical or special or different. So those guys were great to work with. Like, we would come down before we do a shoot, like, if we were doing vignettes in my house or, you know, like that deleter decay or the final deletion or whatever, we would like sit on my back porch, like at the table, and we'd sit there and kind of talk about how we want to do it. And like, this is kind of what I envision. How should we shoot it, JB and Jimmy? And, you know, they would kind of put their spin on it. They would give their ideas. And it was just it was so much fun, and I can't put over JB and Jimmy enough because they were just great to work with, super positive, and just brought so many great creative ideas to the table.
When you guys did the, I can't remember the names of each one, where you and Jeff had a hardcore match, which at basically in your backyard, was it, which one was that?
The Final Deletion, first one?
First one.
The one you watched in Japan?
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah. the one, yeah, well, that's when Jeff Final took Deletion. The crazy bump out of the tree under the yes. ladder, and so that's a no people match. That's kind of what we did tonight. Yeah. How did you guys do that? Because, I mean, obviously, we know Jeffro, but that's a big freaking bump with nobody there. You're treating it like a Hollywood movie, but you're doing all your own
right.
stunts.
Right, yeah. I mean, that was it. I mean, and that's kind of how we shot all those things. Like, you know, I just said, like, it's going to be a Hardy compound cinematic fight. And that was kind of like the terminology we used for that. And, you know, we'd shoot it in different pieces, and we'd try and be as smart and as safe as we possibly could. It's funny, that Final Deletion that you were talking about, we had, like, there was three or four vignettes, and then the match. It was about 20 minutes in total. And, like, we literally shot all that in, like, 16 or 17 hours. And that included getting a little bit of sleep. The last thing that we shot was the lawnmower scene where I drove the lawnmower and, like, messed up his beautiful designs of his yard.
And listen, that was real. If you guys saw that, Jeff really does cut his lawn with strange. Like, yeah. I don't know. Do you know Darby Allin at all?
I don't.
Okay, so Darby is the second coming of Jeff.
Right.
In that Darby has a house. Did you see that Lance Archer thing they did today? That's all in Darby's backyard.
Yes.
Darby has yep. skate mountains. Jeff has dirt mountains for his dirt bike. And Darby paints and draws weird things. And he doesn't do aluminummies, but he does sculptures. And I'm like, dude, you're so freaking Jeff Hardy. It's amazing. But to see that that piece of work, it was like a short film, like I said. Did you, when you were coming back to WWE, did you try and come back as Broken Man? Because you guys surprise debuted at WrestleMania as the Hardy Boys.
Right. I know it was the intention to bring us back as the Hardy Boys initially. And Hunter, who was like, Triple H was very cool with doing the Broken Matt stuff. Said, oh, that'd be great. Maybe we get a run of the Hardy Boys, and maybe we do Broken Matt. You know, and like we ended up getting to do, you know, Vince ultimately because people just kept saying delete over and over. And like that got over so much. That's like really what people want to see from me in this day and age.
It's like the yes chant. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, once he ended up going with a version of that, you know, we ended up putting like a spin on it. So I guess it was like, you know, IPs that he would own, whatever it was, Woken Matt Hardy. But it was just so watered down from what we were doing originally. And I don't think he understood the concept of it. I mean, I think one of the things that was like so beloved by Broken Matt is like he would like wink at the audience and kind of break the fourth wall and say, you know, jokes that would make the smart fans, the diehard fan base pop, you know. And I don't think Vince totally understood that. And I don't think he got it. And I don't think he would even want to play to those people as well. You know, so that was one of the things that was really missing. And there was a point where I did the Broken Matt Hardy laugh, and then Bray had laughed too. And when Vince heard the laughs together, he's like, oh, this is funny shit. Let's roll with this. And then it was every week it was laughing at the end over and over to overkill. And I was like, oh, come on, this became a rib, you know. And that's why even like when I made this thing and Damascus became my essence in the last Free of the Elite that just went up tonight when we were recording this. I've made a very strong effort to make Broken Matt very serious and very vicious in that. And that's what needs to, it's almost like he's being rehabilitated in some ways, you know, and that's what the new essence is doing. I mean, there's a time where Broken Matt can be funny and be like super entertaining, but also people have to realize that you're a threat too. You have to be violent. You have to be vicious. Right. And a lot of that got pulled out of me during that WWE run.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of happens, but the whole concept of, I think the original Broken Matt was a heel.
Yes, he was.
Right.
Yes.
You know, it's this crazy
yes
psycho who, it's like a serial killer. Mm-hmm. Some of them believe they were living in another time or possessed or whatever. Yes. That's the essence of this guy.
Right.
But you had to have known when you went to Vince's world that it was going to get watered down.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I expected that.
Did it make it frustrating to you?
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating. Yeah, I mean, I think everyone goes there being optimistic that you can break through or maybe achieve something different, but it's definitely frustrating. And then like, once again, once you're a little older, and you probably experienced some of this as well. Like I was not a star on your level. You know, you did stuff as a singles competitor, world champion several times over. But you know, like once you get to a certain age too, Vince is like, well, this guy's kind of old now. You know, once even for himself, like at his age, he doesn't even want to be on TV.
That's
because you're old. Nobody wants to see an old person. And it's just like, if you're a talent and you get to a certain age, it's kind of like, I don't know.
I think that it really, what is the saying? Those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Mm-hmm. He didn't learn when Savage and Hogan and Piper left in 94, 95
right.
and became legit pay-per-view draws 96, 97, 99. And when AEW first started, because listen, I'm not sure if we talked around that time. I mean, we're in a group text that has 1,000 texts a day. I'm sure something came up about it. But none of us really, I didn't believe it. We've heard it a million times. A new guy, I remember when my manager first told me about this Tony Khan, and I'm like, all right, Google Khan family. I like lots of money, but we've heard this before. But then when you actually figure it out, like, oh my gosh, this has the magic fruit lined up on the slot machine.
Right.
You have a passionate billionaire who knows what he wants and understands the business. You've got 6 to 8 legit headliners whose contracts are all up at the same time and don't want to go to Vince. And you have a television station that wants to put on a show.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. So
perfect,
I think
perfect storm,
perfect storm. And so once, cause I told Vince, here's what it is. He goes, do it, sign. Once I signed, he was confused. Like, I've told the story quite a bit. Like, can you get out of here? Did you sign it? Yeah. Can you get out of it? I think once I signed, it changed the whole landscape for him. I went from being a guy where he's like, go ahead, do it, until it's like, what? Why did you sign it? Because you told me to, because I was 48 years old, and you right. probably thought, ah, we're done with it. Meanwhile, there's 10 more years left in guys like you and right. I's system that are smart on how right. to work, but are creatively stimulated, right?
Yes.
And so did that was when you were there and first heard about AEW, what were your thoughts about it?
I actually, when we were in Ontario, California, about 6 or 7 months before my deal was up, I met Matt and Nick and had dinner with them just to chat with them. I mean, we've been friends ever since, you know, I met them when I first had my run in TNA. And then, like, we worked closely and we had worked together to come up with an angle where we were actually going to have TNA and Ring of Honor working hand in hand in
really?
Conjunction. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And we were going to do this whole angle with the Hardys and the Young Bucks
right.
from the Broken Mat stuff. And we'd started that like when I showed up at Final Battle for Ring of Honor with them. Mm-hmm. And then we showed up when our contracts ran out and still came to Ring of Honor and like beat them for the tag titles.
Was that in Lakeland or something? Or
That is when we dropped the titles to them before we debuted in WrestleMania.
The day before, right? Or something. Yeah.
But we had a deal set up and we were going to do like a 3 or 4 month program that was going to span across Ring of Honor television and TNA.
It was great.
The reason it didn't happen was because of Jeff Jarrett. He had just came in. Anthem had just bought TNA. Jeff Jarrett was in a bad place in his life, with his issues that he had going on. And he was the one who caused the issues that shut it down. And then I talked to Triple H, like when our deal was up, we ended up returning to WWE because we had a good offer and we're like, okay, well, we'll, you know, go here and we'll finish up or whatever. And that deal ended up being suspended. But ever since that time when I worked more than Jeff, it was me working with like Matt and Nick to like, you know, kind of like create and carve this angle out that we're going to do for multiple months over these two different companies. And then like once that didn't happen, we still stayed in touch. We're still great friends and whatnot. But I just had dinner with him and we were just talking about different things and AEW came out. I said, well, I'm just going to kind of see what happens these next few months for me and see what I think is my best bet going forward, because it is important to me to finish up strong as I end my career. And then just like I pitched idea after idea after idea after idea to WWE, and just like on my own, just I never got any feedback. I would hear a little chatter here, a little chatter there, but there was never anything that like stuck or like, you know, that anything that ever like sparked any kind of like creative fire in Vince's mind. You know, so then I just like became frustrating. Mm-hmm. And then like, they were just trying to re-sign me now at this point just to have me under contract. So I was a WWE property and like I kept turning down money, which was good money. But like I wanted to be in a prominent role in television and I don't think Vince saw that for me. Mm-hmm. And then like even right towards the end when I did that stuff with Randy, apparently the first time we did the deal with Randy, the promo, and then he...
That was supposed to be your write-off.
That was supposed to be my write-off.
But you killed it.
But and it did some... great rating.
But you also did a great promo that night.
Well, thank you.
You did.
Yeah. And I did that. And then like they brought it back the next week, you know, and then we ended up doing two. And that week in the production meeting, we were going to have a 2-segment match that was going to end Raw.
Right.
A 2-segment match after I'd had a concerto and I was going to come out selling a neck brace. And I was like, okay, sure. You know, I'd already pretty much made up my mind. I was gone at this point. You know, even though they actively tried to sign me, I couldn't like have any kind of creative assurances. And that's what I wanted at this point. And I wanted like a dialogue with Vince, like, hey, I need to know that you have my back and you're going to like protect my creative interest. You know, this isn't just like, hey, I want this older guy because like he has some star power to his name or whatever. So that day in the production meeting, Vince's like, I don't think we should have this match because I think Matt's leaving. I don't think he's going to stay. I don't think he's signing. I think he's leaving. And I remember Paul Heyman grabbed me and said, tell me the truth. Are you leaving? I said, I don't know. I said, if there's nothing for me, nothing for me to do here, I said, I can go elsewhere and be utilized in a better way. And that's what's important to me here towards the end of my career. What a weird day. And it was like, I was very honest and open with everyone. And I told everyone from Vince all the way down what I wanted and like kind of what I expected if I was going to stay around. And, you know, once we were on the same page, then I said, okay, well, thank you guys very much. You know, I'll go my own way. And even days after I left, I talked to Triple H, and he like, you know, was trying to give me some good
after
offers.
Your contract was
after
over.
My contract was up, you know, and it's just like he was cool. And I feel like if Triple H would have been the guy that was solely in power, I would have probably had a much better opportunity of kind of getting to do what I wanted creatively. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is.
I can think of some great angles that I pitched over the years. I've talked about them on this podcast, written about in my books. Is there one that you pitched that you thought was really good that obviously so they didn't listen to your ideas, but was one that you pitched that you thought was really killer?
I mean, one that I thought was great was like I pitched an idea to be off TV for a while and then start broadcasting vignettes from the Hardy compound as Broken Matt. And you don't know what's happened. I had a backstory to get there. But I just said, like, you know, I want a meeting with the authority, with Vince or Triple H or whatever. And this was after they came out in the end of 2018, I think. And they said, we're going to listen to the fans. We're going to give them what they want. You know, we haven't been listening to you. We're going to change our ways, whatever. Right. And I said,
I forgot about that one.
You know, and I want to speak with these guys. And then, like, they won't meet with me. And then, like, I start showing up and attack people backstage or production assistants, whatever it may be. And then eventually I get a meeting with Vince or Triple H or someone in the authority in the ring. What do you want? Do you want to get fired? Do you want us to release you? What do you want? Why are you out here? And I go, no, I don't want any of those things. I want to save the show because this is my home and I love it here. And you guys said in December of 2018, you were going to start listening to the fans, and I don't think you have, and I want to. And what I pitch is give me 10 to 15 minutes of the show, and I want to call it the Broken Block. I said, and my idea was like, give me underutilized guys like Chad Gable and Ali and Apollo, guys that aren't being utilized at all. Let me put them on that show. Let them do badass things. Let me put some vignettes from the Hardy compound and House Hardy and just give me like 10 to 15 minutes and I'll call it the Broken Block every show and just see how it does.
And I was every like, week you'll highlight somebody doing vignettes and mini movies or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, these guys have matches.
They have matches, in
the arena. I'm almost like the little commissioner, or like I'm heading up this Broken Block. And we try like give Ali and Chad Gable a best of seven, you know, and cut them loose. Let them have a great matches.
Because you're pulling the strings now for this little world.
And they'll become stars on their own just because of the quality of their matches. You know, and then we'll interject a little Vanguard One, and we'll have some of the, you know, House Hardy on it, whatever. The Broken Block, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. That's all I was asking for. Never heard anything about it.
You know, what's funny is the original highlight reel, I pitched it as Jericho's Junction because I was watching a bunch of Mean Gene Okerlund interviews, and myself included. When I first started doing interviews, he was the Jedi. If you didn't know what you were doing, Gene would lead you through the interview and make you look like a star. And I said, why don't we do Jericho's Junction, where every week, like a Piper's Pit, we bring out underutilized stars, whoever they were at the time. I'll lead the interview. We'll get the people over. We'll get them to do interviews and connect them with the crowd. And Vince is like, I love it. And your first guest is Goldberg. I'm like, well, Goldberg's not really the guy. I'm thinking more like, I don't know, whoever's it, Bull Buchanan. He's like, nope, Goldberg. And the next week, Scott Steiner. The next week, it's Rock. I'm like, the whole concept of what I had is gone. And that was just another talk show, which is fine. It was great. But the original plan was much like yours. Let's give some of these underutilized guys a spotlight where somebody like me or you knows how to bring them along.
And I mean, that was my whole thing. I said, like, look, I don't want to be the world champion. Mm-hmm. I don't want to like have some undefeated strength. You don't need to like keep me strong on TV. Like, just let me contribute to the show in a productive way. I said, and I can help out guys, and then I can get my own character over by my utilization with these guys, you know, and I just never heard anything back about it.
So what was the final, you kind of answered it, but what was the kind of the final straw where you said, I just got to go?
I just you know, I very quickly, I mean, months ago, came to the reality that they're really not going to utilize me in a way that I hope to be utilized. So it just, if I wasn't going to get that, I'm not just there to get a paycheck at this point. Mm-hmm. I want to enjoy what I'm doing. Right. Like, I want to go out there and I want to have fun. I want to be excited. I'm just not here to like collect a paycheck.
So as you're thinking about the things, you're watching AEW, what did you see on AEW that really appealed to you? Did you know most of the guys, or was it the vibe of the show? Or
yeah, I knew most of the guys. They're just doing things that WWE would never do, which breaks protocol. As you know, like, you know, Vince has a vision, and if it doesn't fall into that vision, it is not going to happen. Where I feel like AEW is totally different. They're, from the interactions I've had with Tony Khan thus far, he seems to be very much on the pulse of the current wrestling fan, and he's very open to ideas. You know, if he is set on something, I think he'll stay set on it.
Absolutely. Not a pushover.
No. But he definitely has a good vibe on like what is different and what can work, and like also expanding the boundaries of what we know professional wrestling to be. And that's what AEW was doing. And you could see the fans reacting to it like, oh my God, someone is finally listening to us. They're trying different out of the box things. It's not just like, you know, a paint by the numbers type cycle. They're finally breaking it. And it's just like it became the cool, unpredictable show that was on TV.
You know, and it's, you can take it or leave it for whatever it is. You're talking about the Wrestling Observer Awards, and listen, some people are into it, some people aren't, but you look at the top four promos, best interview, Jericho, Moxley, Cody, MJF, were the top four, and all of us, there's no script.
Right.
Like Mox even said, no one's ever going to give me a script ever again. MJF said, I could never go to WWE because I don't want a script. I don't need a script. That to me is kind of embodies the little bit of the different vibe where people can see it's a little bit more Wild West by the seat of their pants, but it's much more, the control is held by the guys themselves.
Yeah. And guys get to play their own music.
Yeah.
And that's the music they're going to play best.
Right. Right. And either you're going to sink or swim.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And if there is an occasion where you have someone that goes out there and sinks, they will probably learn greatly from it, mm-hmm. you know, but like it's very important. I mean, I feel like a talent comes off the most natural when they are doing what they know they do best and what they feel most comfortable doing.
Now, you have a lot of ideas. I mean, I still am buzzing over that dichotomy, that diatribe here, but what kind of ideas do you want to bring to AEW?
I feel like going forward, I want to look into the Broken Matt, into the mind of Broken Matt, and there's more than just Broken Matt there. Also, the new Broken Matt, Damascus, being the essence that fuels me, has like a toggle ability where he can go from being the immortal.
I love this shit.
The immortal Damascus, the vessel of Matt Hardy, as to being just the regular Matt Hardy, who is the dad of Maxwell and Woofy and Barty.
What's the third brother's name?
Barty.
Barty.
Short for Bartholomew.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Great name.
So there's two of us, you know, there's Broken Matt and there's regular Matt or mortal Matt. You know, I feel like there might even be more in there. And I think that's something we can discover as time
progresses. So many layers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one thing I've been saying, like actually one of the original ideas for Blood and Guts for next week, which was supposed to be in Newark in front of 14,000 people, was to do it in Atlanta because they really wanted to pop the Atlanta market, which is also an arena. Right. It was right in the middle of Cody and MJF, Jericho and Moxley, the Kenny Bucks Hangman thing. It's like, we can't just plop a freaking double cage match into Atlanta just because that's the place we want. I said, right. Where are we with experiments? We orchestrated that we'll get done with our stories. February 29th, the pay-per-view. Then Elite Inner Circle can go on. I said, what's the rush? We have weekly television. We have plenty of time to tell all our stories. And the type of storyteller you are with all the different layers, you now have as much time as you need. There's no rush.
Yeah.
And no one's going to cut you off at the knees and wake up one morning and go, nah, I'm sick of it. You know, then that to me is a benefit because you know that you don't have to try and cram too much in a short period of time.
Yeah, no, it's a huge benefit.
As we start to wind down here, who were some of the guys that you saw in AEW that you really enjoyed? The characters watching?
Yeah, I mean, the first guy that really stood out to me was like Orange Cassidy.
Gosh.
Just because it's just such a unique thing which could never exist in Vince's world. You know, it would never get the opportunity, but like just
they wouldn't get it.
No, they would never get it. And it's just like, I dig it. He's so committed to it. He does it so well. You know, tonight was my first time meeting him, you know, so it was very
cool. He's the best guy too. He's such a nice guy.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Super humble.
I knew he was super good too. When like my son, Maxwell, like had met Bray Wyatt when we did like the, you know, we did the Ultimate Deletion. So like he knew him a little bit and he thought the Firefly Funhouse was really funny. So like Maxwell likes him. But one time Maxwell came up to him, he said, "Hey, Dad." He said, Dad, why does this kid, why does that guy do these lazy kicks?" And then he did the whole Orange Cassidy shtick to me. And when I was watching AEW one night, I was like, "Whoa!" Like, you know, like if a kid emulates a guy that he sees, then he's like doing the
right
thing.
He's also got a costume that people will dress up as him.
Yeah,
we saw so many kids, adults, everyone in between. And he's one of those guys. I've said this before. Like, I come from Vince's world. You left for a while.
Yeah,
I'm a Vince disciple. I learned so much.
Right.
When I first saw Marco Stunt, when I first saw Darby Allin, when I first saw Orange Cassidy, I'm like, come on, guys. You know, the Orange Cassidy, I was like, why did we hire this guy? Marco Stunt, I went on record like, you know, he's too small. Everyone used to say I was too small. Or Rey Mysterio was too small.
Right.
He's over is over. And these guys have such a fan base. Orange Cassidy, if we put the freaking title on him tomorrow, or Darby Allin, same thing, people would go freaking bananas and they would not have a problem with it at all. And people would pay money to see them.
Yeah.
That's what the secret of wrestling is.
Yeah, that's the magic.
Yeah, exactly. Very similar Hardys and Bucks. The first time I met the Bucks, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, you guys are like Matt Jackson and Matt Hardy. So similar.
Right.
Nick is not as out in space as Nero is, but it's the same thing. Big brother, little brother. Did you ever notice the similarities? Did you ever hear of them before you actually work with them? Because to me, that's a big money match.
Yeah, I mean, I think as when we were getting to know them a lot better, when I was working with Matt, probably more than Nick, to like establish that,
like the storyline,
TNA, ROH thing.
Because Matt's more of the guy.
Yeah, you could see that he was more the business guy of the two.
Right.
So it was pretty obvious there. And then like once again, Nick is a maniac when it comes to like doing whatever in the ring.
Yeah, exactly. Just like Jeff is. Is there, I guess it's probably hard to say, is there a chance we might ever see that again?
I would love to. I think so. I mean, Jeff has a while left on his deal, obviously. There was, you know, he has over a year because he'd had some months tacked on, you know, between his injuries and whatnot and personal time away. But I would say as Matt and Brooklyn Matt would say, never!
Well, dude, it's amazing to have you here. Even though the world went nuts, to me, it's just like tonight's show was, if you turn the sound down, it would still be amazing. So if you guys are at home going, I wish it was in front of people, then grab an audience track, just go.
Right.
It was set up perfectly. It was great stuff. Last question for you. What was your, since you're now gone from WWE, is there a certain match or a segment that stood out for you as being your favorite in the last 3 years before you left and came here?
I really enjoyed the stuff that I did do as Woken Matt, and just the fact that I was able to convince Vince and company to do that Ultimate Deletion and have that fight with Bray. It wasn't all that I wanted it to be. But I am very proud that that got accomplished.
It was done on the Hardy compound.
It was done on the Hardy compound.
Shown as a short film.
It had House Hardy. It had Vanguard One in it. And we did some cool stuff. You know, and it like it did great. It like trended worldwide for 4 hours afterwards. You know, like in the big scheme of business, that didn't mean anything. But it means that people did enjoy it. And they were talking about it. So it was very productive. And I feel like we could have done so much more there. But once again, Vince's world.
But did Vince appreciate what you had done?
He didn't understand it.
Even when
he was supposed to watch it earlier to clear it because it was going to go on last on Raw, and it did go on last on Raw.
It went on last. Wow.
It went on last. But like he watched it in the production meeting, and a few people in there had watched it already. But after it was over and ended, everybody like clapped and stood up, and he was just kind of like looking around, and he told a couple people, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Yeah. I mean, if it does good, if it does a number, then I'm truly out of touch. I think he said that. You know, it kept the audience over 3 million viewers, which was cool.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they would love that now.
You know, right?
Nobody gets 3 million viewers,
you know,
now.
So it still it did okay, you know, but like I'm very proud I got to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, dude, it's great to have you here. And next week we may not be friends anymore. I don't know. But either way, it's great to be here and be a part of your Addiction.
Yeah, it's great to be here, and I do have to say, because I only had the small, you know, intro at the end of the show, tonight was the, considering the era we live in right now, where there's like empty arena cards going on, tonight was by far, nothing is even close, the best empty arena television show that has been produced in wrestling history.
I think so.
I agree.
Even more so. And if we have to do more, we'll figure out some more
shit. Yeah.
We're going to make it happen.
No doubt. Thank you.
To the watch.
To the watch, baby.